Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Crop judging, split national title. Split title, the controversy. We need a playoff.
SI's Russ Dellinger.
Seems like he's gunning for basketball powerhouses. You know, already the Big 12 is the best basketball conference in the country, and it seems like he wants to make it better.
And SI's Pat Forty.
If the SEC wants to back up all their talk, which they do on the field, but back it up in scheduling too and play 9 games. Give the people what they want, as opposed to trying to finesse your way through this and then just saying, well, these games are too hard. We can't play them.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod post-Memorial Day. Hope you had a good long weekend. Pat, Ross are in Destin, Florida, working, apparently, maybe.
Intermittently.
Canoodling on the beach.
There's been no canoodling so far.
No canoodling. Yeah.
Not yet.
We'll see how it goes. They're at the SEC meetings, and the existential threat is whether to play 8 games or 9 games in the SEC. And, this thing has gone on and on. I believe Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri compared it to saying, I don't know how the 13 colonies agreed to form a country. When I come to these meetings and no one can decide whether to play 8 times or 9. Love this. Battle lines are drawn. I'll start with you, Ross. What is, to recap for people who forgot because they had anything else in life going on and to fret over this, what is the pro of the 8-game argument? This would be 8-game SEC argument. And what are the pros? What are the supporters of the 9 games arguing for? What are the arguments?
I think that those that are in favor of remaining at 8, first of all, probably a lot of them could be convinced to supporting 9 if ESPN were to give them additional revenue for the 9th game. That appears to not be happening, at least right now, that ESPN will give more money or give enough of additional revenue, which a few administrators said, between $5 and $7 million a team per year is what many of them are looking at for a 9th game. And so it doesn't sound like that's going to happen, at least now. So I think a lot of the 8 gamers, one, is the money factor. I think a lot of the 8 gamers would also say, what does an extra loss? Because obviously half the team would be saddled with an extra loss. What does that do for bowl eligibility? What does that do for CFP chances, even in an expanded CFP? The 8 gamers would also say every other year there'll be an odd number of if you go to 9, there'll be an odd number of home games. So one year you'll have 4, the next year you have 5, the next year you have 4. So those are all the 8 game supporters, what they kind of say. The 9 game supporters, it's pretty simple. Right. It's the SEC is the most valuable league in college football. Let's make it more valuable by playing another SEC game, but right now, the bottom line is, though Greg Sankey disagrees and made that pretty clear Monday night that it's not about money. If you talk to member schools and talk to those in the 8 game camp, guess what? It's about money.
And so that's because you might be losing a home game.
Well, no, they want additional revenue from ESPN.
Just because they're playing a harder schedule.
And they're playing an extra league game, an extra big,
instead of Middle Tennessee
SEC game.
Instead of Middle Tennessee coming in, you're playing Tennessee.
Right.
Okay. Pat, thoughts?
Many thoughts. Thank you. For one, as usual, whenever these folks in charge start talking, saying, well, it's really not a money situation, it's almost always, in reality, a money situation. And I did dearly love when Eli Capiluto, the president of the University of Kentucky, said to Ross Dellinger in his story that you should read on SI.com that you know, there's player health and player well-being is a concern here. Because I guess why? Because there's that much greater a risk to be injured in playing an SEC game as opposed to playing Middle Tennessee or Presbyterian or Citadel? Maybe so. But if you're then concerned about that, playing too many hard games, why did they just approve a 12-game playoff? Because you're going to play more hard games then. Oh, that maybe, though, was about the money. So let's think let's say money is driving the situation here. And if they're not going to get paid more, they don't want to play those games. To me, this is really fairly hypocritical from the SEC because this is the league that wants everyone to know that they are the biggest, the baddest, the best, the toughest. We got the most pros. We got the best teams, the best players, the best coaches, the best everything. Oh, but we don't want to play each other that much. That's too hard. We'd much rather play Presbyterian or Citadel or UAB or Nicholls State an extra time. And this, well, yeah, some years you're going to play four home games in the league. Some years you're going to play five. It's going to be an even. Guess what? That's exactly the way it is in every other Power Five conference that plays nine games. If the SEC wants to back up all their talk, which they do on the field, but back it up in scheduling too and play nine games. Give the people what they want as opposed to trying to finesse your way through this and then just saying, well, these games are too hard. We can't play them.
Yeah, the other quote by Drinkwitz, who's so basically, if I've got it right, the schools that want eight are generally the schools that are in the bottom half of the conference because they don't want to lose, and the schools that want nine generally are the ones that are more likely to win. So Georgia's not really scared of a ninth game, but if you're Vanderbilt, you're saying, well, that's one more loss for us, and we need to get as many wins to sell tickets and, you know, get bowl eligible, whatever. Is that's generally correct?
Generally, although like Missouri is like fine with nine games.
Yeah, Missouri goes nine. So Missouri, Drinkwitz said, the SEC is the best conference because of our fans and our passionate fan bases. I think you lose sight of it saying it's not fair to me. And I would paraphrase that as like, why are we here? Right? Like, if we're going to be in the SEC football team, then let's play SEC football. Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree. I mean, the more times you have this league, you've expanded it. You have all of these brands and fan bases. And I mean, outside of Vandy, I mean, even, you know, the less strong historic teams have great fan bases. You know, Kentucky fills up their stadium and Mississippi State fills, you know, I mean, it's not like there's bad, you know, there's really this, you know, well, we only need, got like North, there's not really that kind of stuff. I don't know. You know what I mean? South Carolina fills up in 80,000 seats. The more times you play these teams, the more SEC you become, the more great games, what the fans are looking for. Attendance is a concern for everybody. Competition in terms of what games to watch is a concern for everybody. You know, I say play it. Obviously, I hate seeing non-conference games of quality go away, and some of them will. But we also are getting this playoff that's going to get us these interregional, interconference, huge games that we never had before. So I'd be in favor of SEC. Let's go. If that gets me an extra Alabama, Georgia every once in a while, let alone week in, week out of another, hey, Tennessee's playing LSU. Awesome. Let's do it.
Well, and don't, you know, I think the secondary rivalries, you know, would move to every other year, you know, if they had eight games like the Auburn, Georgias, and Tennessee, Alabama's, and Texas A&M. That would be played every other year instead of every year.
So explain why. Why would that be?
Well, so in a eight-game model, you have one permanent opponent and seven rotational. Those seven would rotate every other year. You'd get the group of, you know, say you'd get the first group of seven, and then the next year you get the second group, and the next year you get the first again. And so you'd rotate those seven. You get only one permanent. In a nine-game schedule, you get three permanents, and you have six rotational. So in an eight-game schedule, you only get one permanent, so you get your primary rivalry. And in a nine-game schedule, you get three permanent opponents, so you preserve your primary, secondary, and if you have a
Texas is number one primary is going to be Oklahoma. They're going to play Red River Shootout, Dallas.
Right, that's not ending. Yeah,
that's not ending. And so therefore, Texas is not going to play Texas A&M every single year. And
if they go to eight, right?
If they go to eight, Alabama's is going to be Auburn, and that means Auburn's not going to play Georgia every year, and Alabama's not going to play LSU every year.
That's right,
because they're getting ready.
Or Tennessee, yeah,
or Tennessee. Tennessee. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. So yeah,
like, what are we doing here?
For everyone, yes, who hasn't been keeping vigil on all of this, the SEC is going to do away with divisions, and they're going to have. That's why this scheduling format is changing. You know, with it, so the teams play all the teams play each other more often. But yeah, that's one of the things that goes away with this. And that's, yeah, are we really going to vote for something or approve something in which the oldest rivalry in the South, Auburn and Georgia, don't play each other, and in which Alabama doesn't play either Tennessee or LSU, and so on and so forth. There's several other games too that would go by the wayside, Florida and Tennessee. And so on. So, you know, I just think that there are so many more reasons to play a 9-game schedule than there are not to. And I'm shocked that we're still sitting here talking about this. Frankly, we talked about this all last year. We came to no resolution. And then everybody's like, oh, well, this year we're definitely going to resolve it. And then we get here and Ross Rose like, eh, they may just give us like a temporary stopgap, kick the can resolution of we'll decide this for we'll go to eight for a year or maybe two and then we'll get around to deciding. Make a decision.
Yeah, that's the latest thing I wrote yesterday was about, is there maybe a temporary plan to remain at eight for a year, maybe 2 years, and see how the CFP selection process goes, see if ESPN has a little more money to throw in. You know, so maybe maybe they in 24 they do 8 games first year, Texas and Oklahoma get in, and then 25 maybe they could move to 9, or 26 maybe they could move to 9. So that's under consideration right now, is a kind of a temporary model to remain at 8 and to ease into 9. And Greg Sankey in his meeting with media Monday night actually mentioned that he didn't exactly talk about that. He doesn't speak in those specific terms about things discussed in the meeting room, but he suggested that there could be an easing into 9 games. So we could be looking at that. We could be looking at coming out of Destin knowing that for at least 1 year they'll go to 9 games or go to eight games before 9.
What's go ahead, Pat.
I was going to say that, you know, one of the other driving thoughts here in this is, yeah, we'll play harder schedules as long as we get rewarded for playing harder schedules, not just monetarily, but in terms of playoff consideration. And a couple of coaches made the point today. I think Hugh Freeze was one of them, said, you know, are you going to let us in the playoff if we lose 2 or maybe 3 games, but otherwise run the table? And there's been other people in the SEC who have said to me, and I'm sure to Ross as well, that we really want strength of schedule to matter more than losses and one loss record, or matter as much at least with the playoff going forward. And so that's the thing. They want to be rewarded for playing that 9th game and having a better strength of schedule and getting 3 or 4 teams in the playoff.
Well, that's been the problem with this committee, right? It's so hard to know what exactly they're going with. They've got so many criteria that, right, every week we sit there and listen to these explanations, and they can come up with whatever the heck you want, right?
Yep.
And they just sit there and go, well, this time it was this time it was that, because they got there's no clarity on that. Right. And how do you determine strength of schedule and all those things? But certainly college football has to come to the realization it's a new day, and it was built on this idea of these super teams that couldn't be beat. You know, you go back to Oklahoma, the old Bud Wilkerson, you know, what, they win 80 games in a row, or, you know, I mean, just
55 or 56
something games, you know, and yeah, every undefeated versus undefeated. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's not how we look at the NFL. the Chiefs aren't undefeated. You know, Tom Brady put one undefeated team together in the regular season. He won 7 Super Bowls. It doesn't really matter. You can lose games, things like that. And so we got to come to that realization that, and I've heard people go, I don't want to see a national champ with 3 losses. Like, well, that's what's going to be.
Yeah.
We see it in every other sport. You know, sometimes you lose. And doesn't necessarily mean you're the worst team or whatever. And I think we've come to more. I mean, Ohio State almost won national title last year. And they lost to Michigan. And then they come back. And, I mean, they're a field goal from potentially winning the thing. So it's just the way it is. This stuff happens. But I hope the committee values that and hope it does. But I don't know that I'd be that confident of that because I don't know what the committee's going to do. They talk so much that it's hard to know what's real and what's confused. You know, they talk about everything on purpose. So it's very confusing. Here's what I want to know. What does Saban want? I know back in March, I think you sat down with him, Ross, or Fenn, whatever you sat down with him. And he was a little... he's squirrely about his 3 protected games, fixed games, were going to be Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU because of the historic strength of those things. And that wasn't fair to have 3 tough games as your protected 3. I would say he has a point. I also would say, bah, ha, ha, you're Alabama. What the, like, come on. Like,
yeah, there's been a lot of advantages like no to Alabama to over the years, I think.
Yeah, like you're Alabama, okay? Yeah, maybe it is a little bit tougher than what Missouri got.
Yeah, yeah.
Tough break. Well, you got all this other crap. So what does Saban want, and how big is his role in saying, I don't want Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU every year?
Well, I think that the SEC, and I actually love the 9-game model, and the way they did it and the way they – the permanents, I think, are really well done, too. They tried to balance things out, and they try – it's pretty easy to give, you know, each team their permanent opponent. Everybody knows the permanent opponent. Most teams have a secondary, too, so that's pretty easy as well. The third – the determination for, like, a third opponent for a team is based on, basically, the last 10 years of the SEC standings. So – if you are in the top half of the SEC the last 10 years in conference standings, they want to give you 2 top half teams and 1 bottom. If you're in the bottom half of the last 10 years, they want to give you 2 bottom half teams in a top. And so what it ends up coming down to is you get your primary, you get your secondary rivalry, and then that third team is based on the top and the bottom, so to speak. And yes, Alabama does probably have the most difficult 3. And it's because Tennessee's on the rise, right? In the last 10 years, Tennessee's on the bottom. Conference standing-wise, Tennessee's on the bottom of the league. In fact, they're like maybe 11th, you know, 10th or 11th as far as conference standings the last 10 years. So the SEC is considering them a bottom. So LSU would have Auburn, a top-half team. They'd have LSU, a top-half team. And then they get their bottom half, right, in Tennessee. That would be Alabama's 3. That's supposed to be balanced. But Tennessee's obviously come on late, and they beat Alabama last year, and Josh Heupel's got it running, and they've got one of the better NIL situations in the nation, one of the better collectives, one of the most organized collectives. So Saban's argument is they're not a bottom half team anymore, and so don't give us them, or either take away LSU, you know? So that's his argument. And now Pat was in with – I missed Saban today speaking. Pat was in with him. I don't know if he's changed his stance necessarily, but Pat can weigh on that.
Yeah. It was interesting. He kind of – you know, because he's always been one of these guys like, hey, let's play 9. Let's play 10. Let's play 10 Power 5 games. He's even said, let's play all Power 5 games. And he kind of – he was saying that today, and he kind of messed up his wording, but that's basically what he meant. So it's better for the fans, Betty for strength of schedule, that we all play all Power 5 games. But in terms of who those games actually are, he was kind of, he wouldn't really commit the way he has in the past. Like, let's play more SEC games. One of the things he said is if we go to 9 games, we'll have to unwind some of the non-conference Power 5 games that they have scheduled. And they've scheduled some doozies in years to come. You know, some big-time opponents, very high-profile, mega-wattage games. So he was kind of on both sides of that. My take from Saban is basically a little bit like Kirby Smart, like, we're good enough, we'll take whatever we get. But, you know, I think that his primary thought is basically my primary thought, play more good games. And if that's 9 conference, great, which really I think it should be. If it's 8, then don't schedule Citadel and UAB and Western Kentucky. Schedule 2 good non-conference games and we'll go that way. But, you know, I generally speaking, I think if you ask Saban, if you slip it to him, he's just going to say, let's play a tougher schedule. What's Although next? I will say the highlight of the Saban press conference was when a phone went off in the middle of it. Uh-oh. And, you know, it's a Nick Saban press conference. Everybody's like, oh, no, who is so dumb dead. That they would have their phone on? It was Nick Saban. It was his own phone. I found that wonderful, considering, like, you know, everybody is absolutely terrified of making a mistake in a Saban press conference because he will cut you to the core. And this time he was the one screwing up. So I enjoyed that.
Who dared call him?
I don't know. He looks at it and he's like, I don't even know how to turn this thing off. He was disgusted.
He was disgusted with his own his own discipline.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. When he goes to the SEC thing, does he bring the Diet Coke bottle?
He did not no. bring it. No, did not bring that and set it up.
Does not carry that around. Do you think that thing's ever, is it just one bottle for the last like 15 years?
I think
or is it a new bottle? Has it ever been drank?
Like I've asked Josh Maxson, their SID, this one time, and I want to say that they've got it like stuck in storage somewhere, and they just bring it out and dust it off every year. But if they update the logo on the thing, then you need a new bottle.
Does he drink Diet Coke? Do you think Saban drinks Diet Coke?
I think he drinks nails. I don't know what he drinks.
Little Debbie, Little Debbie cookie, and yeah. All right, so when is this ongoing saga going to stop?
Good question.
I appreciate it. It's something.
It's great
May.
Content, isn't it? I know.
I don't know about great, but it's content.
It's content in May. Greg Sankey said he met with a few media Monday night here, and he said, it's good fodder for you guys. Maybe we just keep it going, and maybe they will. I don't think it's a definite that they'll vote on anything this week. As Sankey says, they're poised to vote, he said, but they were poised to vote last year here. So this has been delayed by a year. I get the sense it's almost 50-50 on whether they'll actually make a decision here. And maybe it's one of those things where they make a decision, the president's on a Zoom call next week, and then it's announced that they'll remain at 8 for a year or two or something like that, and then further examine 9. That's my guess.
What else are they scrapping about down there?
Well, sports gambling is the topic of conversation. The folks actually from the U.S. Integrity Office are here. They partner with a lot of schools to track, you know, data, track irregularities. They're the ones who caught, I believe, right, Pat? They notified, I think, with the Alabama, the Bohannon situation. I think they notified the Cincinnati sports book, maybe, or something like that. They were the ones behind that. They're actually here. I'm meeting with folks. So sports gambling is the topic. NIL, always the topic, right? NIL, tampering, that whole stuff. Texas A&M, we talked about on the pod before, is going to start kind of using its foundation, its fundraising arm, to operate NIL, basically. Its fundraising arm will be able to strike NIL deals. It's an initiative they announced earlier this spring. And there's a lot of, I guess you could say, upset people in the conference about that, because many believe that well, first of all, is against the NCAA rule, may risk Title IX violations, and brings athletes closer to being considered employees. And they can get away with it because their foundation is set up in a way where it's kind of separate from the university. Not all foundations in the country and in the SEC are like that. And also they have a state law that protects them. So that's a story of conversation here. There's a lot of SEC teams that are looking at doing a similar model. And it's something that Greg Sankey addressed Monday night. As he said, the state laws are making a mess, he said, of college athletics.
Yeah, the Dan, you would appreciate there has been an appropriate amount of hand-wringing, anxiety, angst, and turmoil from our leaders here about the state of things, including we did have one guardrails reference from Billy Napier. He wants some guardrails.
I think I think Drink wanted some guardrails too. Guardrails.
Yeah, Drink, and boy, Hugh Freeze did his best with existential angst of, you know, is this still the reasons he got in the profession? And, you know, all of that,
what were his reasons? Cause I have a few,
building a culture, creating a team, that maybe let's play a little better than we really are. Can we still do that? It weighs on my mind.
Well, I'm sure there's a good high school job waiting for you if you don't want the job. I mean, this is like trial attorneys, like your personal injury attorney, like flying on his private jet to his private island going, I went to law school because I love the law. I don't know that that's, I mean, go become a public defender then. Now it's all about settling, bullying and settling with insurance companies. Okay. Come on.
Yeah,
plenty of high school jobs out there. Plenty of high school coaching jobs.
There are. A lot of angst.
A lot of angst. It's awful. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. What a horrible business where everyone makes more money year after year. only growth industry I've ever heard everyone say we're doomed. I've said this in the past. I'm going to keep saying it and people don't get it, but like these coaches are the worst marketers for their sport. The constant complaining about everything drags into the fans and the fans actually believe everything's horrible.
Yeah. That's true. And you know, maybe it's just because nobody cares what we say. Like, sports writers get together and usually complain about the state of the business, too. But fortunately, like, nobody cares what we say. But coaches, everything comes down on stone tablets from Mount Sinai. And so, yeah, when they say everything's terrible, the fans believe everything's terrible.
Right. Sports doomed. We're terrible. Coach says it's horrible. Coach got a 23% raise last year after winning 5 games.
Got an automatic extension for going 7-6 after beating 3 G5 teams to get to 6-6 and go to a bowl game.
Yeah. Quick SEC break here. We have a report out on the laziest states in America came out.
Uh-oh.
TotalShape.com. A study, it was a study by America's Health Rankings. I don't, whatever the hell that is. It just means more, gentlemen. Can you name the laziest state in America?
Boy, I live in Kentucky, and you know, look, I'm not exactly the most fit, ambitious person out there, but I've got a lot of company, so I'm going to say Kentucky.
Well, first of all, I don't know this is negative.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
It's I'm kind of interpreting it as negative. But
well, that's your opinion. Me. Kentucky fourth, tied with West Virginia for fourth.
Well, that's Kentucky and West Virginia kind of go together.
Yep. Ross, laziest state in America.
I'll go with the old home state. Let's go with the SIP.
Number two came in second.
Mm. Ooh, close.
Came in second. Alabama took the title this year.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Okay. War Eagle. I don't know how, because we've heard about this Bama Rush thing, so they're all working hard. The young scholars up in Tuscaloosa are working hard. I guess nobody else in the state is.
Must not be. Yeah. I mean, we had the one guy working hard to light the stuff on fire at the Dollar Tree. You know?
That guy's working hard. There's any number of shootings.
Yeah.
Kentucky, you had that hot pocket incident. I mean, there's a lot. Yeah. I don't think this is fair. It's not easy to shoot somebody. Quite honestly, lazy would just be like you just bemoan that the last hot pocket was eaten. You don't take out a firearm and blast a guy.
That's right. Yeah, you just sit there and say, poor me. Somebody ate my hot pocket.
Yeah. Oddly, this story doesn't say who the least lazy is, State. What is going on here? Anyway, the rankings, Bama, Mississippi, Arkansas, West Virginia, Kentucky tied at 4, Louisiana 5th, Tennessee 6th, Oklahoma 7th. So that was a good addition to the SEC. Illinois and Delaware came in at 8.
Oh, there's your SEC busters.
I'd say Delaware is just, I mean, I wouldn't even think, like, Delaware.
Hmm. I think they are lazy because what have they done to distinguish themselves in Delaware?
It's a good point. You know? It is a good point. Maine, it's just cold, man. That should be the laziest. It's cold. Ohio came in at 10. Big 10. Let's do it. Anyway, thought I'd just throw that in there. All right. Also ongoing saga, the Alabama baseball gambling scandal. You mentioned Coach Bohannon. While you're down, can you find out who he's picking in the NBA finals? can Miami keep this up? I'm just saying I'd be interested. Just asking for a friend.
Yeah.
So, Pat, a father of a player, not an Alabama player, though, is in this. Details, please.
Yeah, boy, this is a wild one. A story tailor-made for the podcast, I would say. Yeah. By the way, Delaware did have some gumption at one point. They were the first state ratified through the Constitution to be the first American state.
See, they hustled back then. They hustled hardest.
They've lost their hustle. They got nothing. Anyhow, so, yeah. When it came out that Cincinnati also had a gambling scandal, and we knew that the Alabama gambling scandal originated in the city of Cincinnati at the sports book at Great American Ballpark, the obvious thought was, is there a connective thread here? And lo and behold, there is. And that thread is one Bert Eugene Neff Jr. of Mooresville, Indiana, who has a son who plays for Cincinnati, but he's also been a Indiana Elite League coach and administrator. He's pretty well connected in recruiting and obviously in youth baseball. And lo and behold, he has some connection to Brad Bohannon, because that was the thing that that blew this thing up. Supposedly there was some level of surveillance that saw that he was in communication with the Alabama baseball coach while he was making the bet against Alabama. And apparently the Cincinnati coaches knew, too, what he was doing, and they did not report it. It's unclear whether he bet on Cincinnati games, but we've got one guy who's so far gotten three coaches fired and two schools mired in major investigations that could have criminal repercussions. And I would say that combined with what's going on at Iowa and Iowa State, where there's a combined 41 athletes and staff who are suspended, has got everybody shook in college sports. I think there's a lot of people that want to know who all's gambling, where, and are we involved? Because it's been a big topic down here so far.
It seems like you're more likely to get caught now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of your problem. Yes. Better to not know. Well, if you're big, I mean, again, red flag city. Someone's betting on a Cincinnati baseball game?
Yeah, well, we don't know for sure whether he's betting on Cincinnati. He's definitely betting on Alabama and LSU.
Yeah.
And the Cincinnati coaches were aware that he was betting on games.
I got it.
But still, no, like, yeah, there's red flags all over the place. Look, obviously, this guy is not some gambling mastermind. Because apparently he tried to bet a lot of money on a college baseball game. Yeah. And apparently he was certainly not circumspect in his communication with Brad Bohannon, the coach at Alabama. Didn't really keep that a tight secret. And, yeah, there's just, as you said, look, and we've discussed on the pod, there's a lot more ways to get caught now doing stuff like this. So college sports, it might be the best thing for it. Is it going to bring it all to light and everybody's going to get scared straight, or they're going to get busted?
Don't do it. You're going to get caught.
Yep.
There's been a lot of questions too about to coaches about, hey, do you think that college athletes should be able to bet on any pro sports. And I, you know, I think Eli was asked about that. A couple others were asked about it. I think there's just too close of a connection, you know, between all the sports, college, pro, whatever. And most of them are agreeing that, yeah, you shouldn't bet at all. Just stay completely away.
Yeah. I would push hard for my kids to just not do it, whether there's a rule or not, or you can create your own rule or, you know, yeah. I don't know, but it's just not a, just not, it's too much risk there. College golf story. We've got the NCAA championships going on. Golf Network shows. Watched some of the women's team last week. It's pretty good. Always enjoy the golf. I'm a golf person, so I enjoy the college NCAA golf championships. But unbelievable story here. Oregon junior Gregory Solhaug had to, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name wrong because I don't want to add insult to what is truly an injury. I never even heard of this. He had to withdraw from the men's championship. He stepped on a tee, a golf tee. It went through his shoe and injured his foot.
That is unbelievable.
So it must have pierced the foot. I mean, I would be the only way I could imagine the injury being so significant that you would get a kid to drop out of the NCAA championships. He had to be removed from the course. So again, this isn't like a, yeah, throw a Band-Aid on that thing.
No.
And he's out, and they talked it might take like 2 days, 2 weeks until he's not, like, he's on crutches. I've never even heard of a tee injury.
Never. No. You hear a lot of athletes who get injured in weird ways, and golfers can be some of them, but not this way. And apparently a bad injury through his shoe and through his foot.
That is wild. How sharp is this tee?
Like a nail or something.
God.
A spike. I mean, like, what? Yeah.
Is it a metal tee?
I don't know.
Why would you have a metal tee?
Although I don't see them a lot, but I mean, I've seen them before. I mean, I don't know how that's
metal tee is the stupidest. First off, you damage your club. Yeah. I mean, why would you have a metal tee? B, metal tee is like if you're too cheap to buy a tee.
Yeah. You don't think the University of Oregon's can afford golf tees?
Even if the Pac-12 ends up on gas station TV, they're going to be able to afford tees. I always thought, guys are like, I don't want to lose my tee. You can buy a bag of the tees. Like, it's a tee. It's not like I need what tee does Tiger endorse? I better get the top line tee. It doesn't matter.
No.
It's no.
Will it go in the ground and hold the ball up? Okay.
Like, what? Doesn't matter. The tee.
Yeah.
So no, they do make stronger plastic tees now. They're not the wooden ones that just break easy.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you injured. How hard was this guy stomping? This is amazing injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
Golf
and it
week
takes
has
him out of the
deep.
NCAA championships. I mean, that's a bummer.
I'm terrified now.
Yeah.
All this and time like, how I was you- risking injury every weekend.
How do you find one that's just sitting up perfectly like that to stab through your foot? Usually it's the other way around. The pointy end is in the ground.
And what's with these
luck?
What's with these Nikes they're wearing that can't hold off a tee? Come on, Phil Knight.
Yeah, come on, Phil. You're the sugar daddy of the whole program.
This is the sequel to Air, the tragic sequel. Air took a twist when Michael Jordan was playing golf before game 6 of the 98 finals and stepped on a tee and his Nike shoes. Now, I don't know.
Punctured, yeah. I mean, just unbelievable.
Dan, you brought up the gas station TV. We there is a few things to talk about when it comes to that. You know, Big 12, they're meeting this week like SECs. They're in West Virginia and Greenbrier. And, things are coming down to the wire in the realignment world, it seems. I think Brett Yormark is interested in that expansion. He's targeting those Pac-12 schools. And Pac-12's deal continues to, not be agreed to And they're meeting this week, and it's going to be a big topic with the presidential board and the athletic directors in Greenbrier, West Virginia, about expansion and expansion targets. And, you know, I think Colorado and maybe the Arizonas are two that people, at least within the Big 12, think they are going to get or can get. So it's going to be interesting to watch what comes out of Greenbrier, you know, Friday, Saturday, to see what you know, what's happened out of there, because expansion's a big topic, and they got their eyes on the Pac-12 teams.
So obviously they want Colorado, the Arizona schools, and Utah, right?
There's also this kind of
secondary pursuit of Gonzaga, UConn, San Diego State, and UNLV. Is that correct?
Yeah, Gonzaga and UConn are probably the two big ones. I think there's probably some pairing there of what the Big 12 wants. You know, they obviously would prefer to get the four Power 5 Pac-12 schools because contractually they get a pro rata, I think, from their TV deal if for every additional Power 5 team, not Group of 5. So Group of 5 could have to split the pie or not give them full share. I don't know how that would work. But they would like to get the, you know, I think option A would be we get the four Pac-12 South schools. Option B is there's some kind of combination, maybe one or two Pac-12 schools like Colorado, Arizona, plus one or two Group of Five schools like Gonzaga and UConn, because it seems like he's gunning for basketball powerhouses. You know, already the Big 12 is the best basketball conference in the country, and it seems like he wants to make it better. So there's probably, it could be a combination, you know, of a Power Five and a group of, you know, in a group of fives. And then as you mentioned there, you know, UNLV, they're interested in UNLV. Lower down the list, there's some others like the Memphis, like we mentioned in that realignment story a couple weeks ago. Those are pretty far down the list. San Diego State is on that list too. I mean, both the Pac-12 and Big 12 seem to be interested in them. I think San Diego State administrators, just like Colorado, just like Gonzaga, they've all had conversations with Big 12 officials.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that Yormark is, I mean, he is an absolute disturber, for lack of another term. You know, I mean, he's willing to disrupt, to go get things, to go against the grain a little bit. I don't think that there had been anybody, you know, from a Power Five mindset that was like, yeah, go get a couple basketball schools. But maybe he is a New York guy, and I'm sure he knows the power of UConn's fan following in the New York area. But also, you know, probably is like, hey, this is just one more way to make our conference better, is to add two really marquee basketball programs, expand us literally coast to coast, get us in the Pacific time zone, which they aren't yet. And we'll try to just keep expanding our product as we go along here. And I think, you know, I don't know whether, you know, I don't think we have any idea for sure. Like, are they willing to just, can they tell Gonzaga and UConn or whoever else just like, hey, you're on hold. We're waiting to find out if the Pac-12 is going to blow up. But if not, we're calling you right away. Like, you know, where are they on the friend status list here? You know, are they standbys, or are they, you know, first tier? So, but it's fascinating to me watching Yormark maneuver here, and it'd be interesting to see what comes out of that meeting at Greenbrier this week.
I just hate the idea of UConn doing this, but
I think it'd be terrible. Terrible.
They are popular in New York City, but not that popular.
No,
I mean, like, they bring more fans to the Big East championship, like Big East tournament. When UConn's playing, there'll be a lot of UConn fans there at Madison Square Garden. No question, because the state of Connecticut, the border is, I don't know, like literally less than 10 miles from middle of Manhattan. Maybe, I don't know, whatever. Take the train in, you're right there. There's a lot of UConn alums in the city, all that. But it's not like they're bringing 100,000 people. It's like there's like 8,000 of them there.
Right. Yeah, no, they're not filling Ohio Stadium.
Right. I mean, it's yes, there's more. UConn matters. There's enough fans that they're important when they're playing in the big. But when they were not there and they just play a one-off, and if they do one of those early season games, it's not like Madison Square Garden is full. right? I remember like I used to cover, I'm sure you did, Pat, when Indiana and Kentucky would play a non-conference college basketball game at the Hoosier Dome.
It was awesome.
Unbelievable.
40,000 people.
Yes, 40,000 people are there. It is unbelievable scene. And they if they could have, they didn't do the mid, if they had figured out how to do that middle, like that was when they did half a stadium.
Yeah.
It was set up like the Carrier Dome is. And then later they did the full stadium for the final. They would have gotten 70,000 because it was Bob Knight. It's Rick Pitino. The teams are killing it. Everyone's there. It's these incredible games. UConn can't do that.
No.
So it's like, I hate the idea of UConn going anywhere. You've got something special. Ride it.
Yeah. And they had just screwed it up and got it right.
I don't know what Gonzaga does, but like, couldn't you just make like, couldn't the Big 12 make like a 5-game scheduling arrangement with Gonzaga every year? Something like that. I don't know what Gonzaga wants to do. It's tough.
Gonzaga wants to go. They don't want to stay in the West Coast Conference.
I don't blame them there. But they don't have a football program. So I don't know. Big 12, they're making moves though. They're making moves.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember this too. Like there's one thing that, you know, it's one thing for Brett Yormark to want something and another thing for it to be approved by the Big 12 presidents. You kind of need that approval. And he's pretty aggressive. He's come in with a lot of ideas and a lot of things have been approved and a lot of things have not, right? And not progressed. So it'll be interesting to see because, I mean, if you're, say, UCF, you want to fly out to Gonzaga, you want to fly your volleyball team to Gonzaga and your softball team. I mean, those things don't make a whole lot of sense, right? Which is why probably the Big 12 would prefer just to have, you know, Gonzaga basketball coming, but Gonzaga probably wouldn't prefer that.
Well, and then does the West Coast Conference keep all the other teams?
The West Coast Conference doesn't want to do that. That doesn't do them any good.
No, and Gonzaga's traveling for everything because you're in Spokane, Washington. I mean,
unless
they play Idaho, there's nothing to do. Yeah. So they have to travel. Yeah, no, I agree. It makes zero sense. Nobody needs to go out there to play these games. But here we are. It does go back to the idea of, like, I wish there were football leagues and basketball leagues. And, like, we see it in hockey, right? Or, you know, some of these sports, water polos and things. Oh, Pat goes through it all.
We've had some more spring sports championships, by the
way. Yeah, yeah, actually, let me get to that.
Running tally. Uh-oh, do we have a tally?
Hold on, let me see what I got here. I definitely have some. There was a new list from the Sickos Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Non-NCAA national championships. And, yeah, pretty interesting. I'll give you a guess. Who won cornhole doubles? Go ahead.
Cornhole doubles. Okay.
It's got to be a Midwest or Southeast. In Wisconsin, big in cornhole.
It is. The Cock Commanders took the cornhole doubles.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Really?
Okay. Yep. Rocky Top, Tennessee, took the cornhole team title.
Wow.
Okay.
There you go.
SEC dominance.
Hip hop dance.
I saw this one, which, yeah, this was Stunner. Like the most antithetical thing ever. Yeah.
It's BYU. BYU won hip hop.
Yeah. I just.
Like,
I guess,
New York City is just shameful. It's shameful.
I feel like I would have to see that to understand.
I don't know what. They won the Division I A. I don't know what this team is that won another one. I mean, there's some great ones. Ballroom dance. Anyone? Ballroom dance? You'll never get
ballroom dance.
Be like New York University. Or something.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Northeast.
The smooth operators of Purdue. Purdue.
Oh, wow. Come on.
Bunch of
farm kids.
The boiler up. Wow.
You can't even like bang the big drum in ballroom dancing, you know? I mean,
dance. Crop judging. Crop judging.
Nebraska.
Split national title. Split title. The controversy. We need a playoff.
Nebraska and Kansas.
How could you not have a playoff in crop judging?
That's good. That in like Iowa State, then nothing is. Come on.
Iowa State and Kansas State split the crop judging title this year.
Pat and I each got one. All right.
Yeah. This stuff's amazing. What are these things? Stanford won cybersecurity. I mean, it makes sense.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Forensics, Western Kentucky.
Okay. That's a weird one.
And wow. That's the forensics though. That's like speaking or debate or whatever. Like, I don't, why are there two forensics? Cause there's forensics that like scientific examination of crimes and stuff. And then there's this other forensics. Why do we have two? Can't we, aren't there more words in the language?
I don't know. Mock trial, UCLA.
Hmm. Okay. LA lawyers.
LA lawyers. Don't trust those guys. Michael Avenatti NIL deals were coming in. Opera scenes. I don't even know what that is. Something. I don't know what that title. I don't know what these, some of these schools, I just don't even know what the school is.
Opera scenes. Really?
I shouldn't even have brought it up. Harvard won squash, men's and women's, just dominant.
Mm,
wow. Shocking.
So glad that the squash athletes got their back door into Harvard. Trumpet ensemble small. The trumpet ensemble small.
Tulane. Mm. There's some great brass work.
It should be. It should
be. That's a good call. That's a good
call. Fight on. SC wins the trumpet ensemble.
Mm. What about trumpet ensemble large?
I think it's North Texas, but I'm not sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. I don't know. They also would have won men's polo. It's a green, like, I feel like I'm in that Tennessee Titans schedule reveal. You seen that thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where they went down to Broadway and interviewed non-football fans, and they're like,
yeah.
Who's that? Bulls? Who's
no, Patriots? They didn't know what the...
That's the Patriots logo?
I didn't know the logo. I thought I... Alabama rolled tide. They won the wheelchair men's and women's basketball.
Oh, yeah. They're actually like a dynasty in that. They have good been. They've won many titles, I believe, in that.
Yeah. Cornhole. Yeah, we got that. Skeet shooting, Texas A&M. I'm always nervous when the military academies do not win things with guns, but yes. They do have that. They have the fake army down there.
They do. They can fake army with the best of them.
Also, drone racing, Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, that fits. Big on their mechanical engineering down there. I'm sure aeronautic engineering.
Boxing. So if you're at this school, do not, if someone picks a fight with you, just walk the other way. Boxing, Illinois, the Illini.
Really?
They get these guys from Chicago. Gyms.
Chicago, right? Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Jim, so what's that? Big Bad Leroy Brown, or what is it? That's a song?
Yeah. Bad Leroy Brown.
Yeah, that's bad Leroy Brown.
Close enough, Dan.
So like a bar fight in Champaign is a serious bar fight. Do not get yourself involved.
Get away. You could be fighting a champion boxer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it right now, although we may have more. I want more info into the crop judging split title.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's just
participation trophies at this point in crop judging. We've all lost our phone at times. I'm sure everyone's misplaced their phone. It's very unnerving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guy in India named Rajesh Mishwas. He is a food inspector in New Delhi, India, and he dropped his smartphone while taking a selfie near the Kerkata Dam in the central Indian state, and it fell into a reservoir of water.
Ooh.
So what does he do? Since he's a food inspector, here's the story from the AP. A government official in India has been suspended from his job after he ordered a water reservoir to be drained so he could retrieve his smartphone.
Oh, come on.
Which he had dropped.
Drained the whole thing?
Drained the entire reservoir.
Wow.
He first asked local divers to jump in the reservoir to find the device, claiming it contained sensitive government data. But after initial efforts to retrieve his smartphone failed, he asked for the reservoir to be emptied using diesel pumps. Over the next three They have
What's
a massive
this guy's
drought
job?
There.
He has that much clout, right? He has apparently. That much clout that he can just say we're draining this reservoir.
2 million liters of water were pumped out from the reservoir.
Oh my God!
It could have irrigated 1,500 acres of land during India's scorching summer. There are videos of him sitting under a red umbrella as diesel pumps run the drain water from the reservoir.
Oh my God!
He retrieved the phone, but it wouldn't start because it was waterlogged.
You go through all that effort, it doesn't even work?
That's what they said.
Oh my gosh. That guy's like the worst person on earth.
Yeah. I don't really have much defense on that.
No. That's a bad human.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. And then, so someone sent us that one. And, I mean, didn't he think the phone would be gone? What's on this phone?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it cost less to just get a new phone?
You would think.
Mm.
And was he saving his data to the cloud or whatever? I mean, it could have been retrievable that way.
Mm, true.
Never mind. I'm not getting into the...
I don't know. I don't know how it works.
The cloud.
Cybersecurity at Stanford would know.
There you go. They could have helped him. See, he could have just called Palo Alto instead of drained... the precious water of India.
Well, all right. This week in food crime.
Oh, here we go.
Two people were arrested. This comes out of Toledo, Ohio. Two people were arrested after police say they tried to rob the employees of a Toledo Wendy's after cheese was left off their chicken sandwich.
Oh, Lord.
Dominique Easel and Jelena Stewart are facing robbery charges as they tried to take an employee's phone during an altercation. It was at the 1800 block of Lasky Road at the Wendy's there. They called police saying disgruntled drive-thru customer who did not receive cheese on her crispy chicken sandwich entered the restaurant and angrily confronted the employees. Without provocation, she grabbed two Frosties from the counter, threw them at the employees, knocked and threw several items in the register area, including the cookie display, which hit and injured a pregnant female employee.
Oh, no.
All right. So two things here. The phone was retrieved by another employee before the two suspects drove off, but not before Easel returned the chicken sandwich without cheese by throwing it into the restaurant. All right. So you order your chicken sandwich. There's no cheese on it. Are you justified in this outburst? Pat 40.
Oh, you know, I love to be able to try to justify the most outrageous things possible, but I don't think I can support absolutely like going ballistic, attacking people, injuring people, and throwing your chicken at them in, you know, retaliation for lack of cheese. I think you have to power through. If you can't just, you know, request respectfully and even persistently request cheese, then maybe you just got to give up and go away, as opposed to ending up being charged with various crimes because of cheese rage.
Well, you're talking to someone who doesn't or tries not to eat cheese, as I'm lactose free. So I'd be just fine with no cheese in my sandwich.
I don't think a good chicken sandwich needs cheese.
I think
cheese is actually kind of an insult to a good chicken sandwich. Then again, this is a Wendy's chicken sandwich. It was not, you know, the Popeyes, the Chick-fil-A's, they don't put cheese on there.
Mm-mm. They don't.
I don't know. Wendy's throwing that cheese in. You could certainly get out of the car. I know Ohio is the 10th laziest state, but these guys are going to be making big rocks into small rocks down at the prison now. I think if you go in and say, can I have a piece of cheese? Most Wendy's someone's going to be like, yeah, we'll throw that on there. Yeah. My real issue is with the lack of respect given to the two Frosties. Frosty is there's a sanctity to the Frosty.
A Frosty is a high quality, like, dessert beverage for sure. That's a very good drink. You can't be just slinging them around.
Yeah. I mean, there's never been a bad Frosty ever made.
No.
Frosties, you know. And so throwing two Frosties and the Frosty waste is really my issue. I would charge him with an extra crime on that.
Throw the book at him.
I would definitely throw the Frosty at them. That's bad. That's just bad. All right. That's obviously we're done here.
May pod. The May pod is rolling, baby.
The last May pod. Right?
The last May pod. We made it through May without going to the win total gimmick.
All right.
That's a victory.
Doubt will make it through June.
It's longer odds on that happening than TCU making the title game. So I congratulate us all. I congratulate the listeners for going on with it. We'll be back later in the week. More from the SEC meetings, Big 12. Who knows what's happening? Continue to subscribe and share us on social media and tell your friends about us and all that. We greatly appreciate all of this. Talk to you later.